Blog Talk Radio.
Tuesday night, that means it's time for another episode of Stunt Trek with yours truly, Uncle Jim, Admiral Ken, and the one, the only, the Leslie Hoffman. Now, everybody knows that Leslie's been involved in Star Trek in her professional career. She's worked on countless episodes and TV shows and movies, and we've talked about them many, many times before. But tonight is going to be a special show. Tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. Tonight we're going to step away from behind the camera. We're going to step away from the sets of Star Trek and the world of Star Trek. And we're going to step into the fandom of Star Trek, the personal, you know, what Star Trek means to us personally and how Star Trek, our involvement in Star Trek and our various ways of involvement have affected our lives and what it means to us to be a Star Trek fan. So if you're listening to the show and you have a story that you'd like to share with us, our number here is 646-668-2433. We will be here for the next hour and we would love to hear your story. 646-668-2433, same number it's always been. Give us a call. We'll get you on the air. We'd love to hear your story. So I recently, well, before we start that, let's go around the room and see what's going on with everybody. We'll start off with Admiral Ken. How you doing tonight, Ken?
Okay. Like I said, I've been doing some rather behind-the-scenes maneuvering. This is fun. But as I pointed out on one of the posts on, I think, Trek Talking and Beyond, I've been doing this longer than probably almost everybody associated with these shows. And that's the reason why, because I do these things.
You do these things. This is very true. You're the do things go-to guy.
Yes, I'm the person who left Tricon 2 flyers in the first floor men's room of the Hilton Hotel, because of course you couldn't leave flyers in the hotel because, well, they would pick them up too soon.
And what else do you do when you're standing at a urinal except read a flyer about a Star Trek convention? It makes perfect sense.
Yes. For that matter, if you have to use the toilet, where do you put the flyers you have on your hands? In your hands? Why, by the sink, of course.
Of course. It could happen to anybody.
Yes, really. You get so forgetful.
Way back in the day. And, of course, we have with us, as usual, the Leslie Hoffman, because we wouldn't have Stunt Trek without Leslie. How are you doing tonight, Leslie?
I'm doing okay. I don't know how many people got to read the post, but last week, one morning, it was 32 degrees up here.
A little early.
I'm sorry. I had to take care of my dog there. He was going crazy because another dog went by the house. But she's outside now, so we should be fine. But anyways, back to the show. See, that's the thing about live, doing this live. There's no editing, so everyone gets to hear the dog, the cat, everything. Anyway, I had the pleasure.
Speaking of which, let's say hello to our other crew member, Emma. Hi, Emma.
Yep, Emma's outside now barking at a dog. AJ is here giving me looks. Usually he makes an appearance and hangs off my headset. We'll see what he does tonight. But I had the pleasure of going to Crossgates Mall in Albany, New York on Sunday at 1 o'clock and seeing for the first time in the movie theater, not the first time, but in the movie theater, Star Trek The Motion Picture. And I got to tell you guys, there was 12 people in the theater, so it was very crowded. And
aww.
Yeah, it was crowded. And of those 12, I knew 6 of them, so what does that say? But at any rate, when the movie started and they finished with the introduction, they played the Ilaiya Star Trek song, what do you call that, the intro, whatever, before the movie started. We break into the Star Trek theme song, the cast names come on, we see V'ger, we hear the Klingon song and the Klingon battle cruisers, and this damn fool jumped up and started cheering. Can you believe that? Who would do something like that in a movie?
Gee, anyway, I don't know,
maybe
Jim.
You.
Who would do that? And the funny thing is that damn fool was actually going to go dressed up as a Klingon. But because I was going to the theater from camp, I didn't have my Klingon outfit with me, or I was going to go as a Klingon. But so I enjoyed it, to say the least. But I do have to say one thing. Star Trek, the motion picture, 40 years old, held up absolutely beautifully on the big screen. I was, when the Klingons battle cruisers fly over at the beginning, I was looking at all the magnificent detail on those ships, the lights on the ships, I was blown away at how good John Dykstra did on those special effects 40 years ago. No CGI, all models. And the Klingon bridge, we had Tom Morga on last week or the week before, Leslie? Something like that. I think it was last week. Was it last week?
Last week was Tom.
Yeah, I'm getting old. I my memory's going. But we had Tom Morga on, and he was the Klingon first officer standing next to Mark Leonard on the bridge. And I went to see this movie. I was paying attention to the bridge. I was looking for all those details, all those little details that you just don't see when you watch it on your TV, looking for mistakes, and I couldn't find any. That Klingon bridge was spectacular. And the Klingons were spectacular. The makeup, outstanding. I can't say enough about this movie. And even the one scene that everybody complains the most about, when Captain Kirk flies around the Enterprise with Scotty, and we get to see the Enterprise from every conceivable angle possible. Even that scene, the Enterprise looked absolutely magnificent. Magnificent. I was blown away at how well this movie stood up after 40 years. I was very impressed. I just can't say enough about it. And the warp effect, I love that rainbow effect when the ship would go to warp speed. The warp engines are black. They would glow blue, and then it would jump into a circle with that rainbow effect around it. Outstanding. And the final shot of the movie, of the Enterprise flying over. Some of you that are old like me might remember the 25th anniversary trailer for Star Trek. The Enterprise flying overhead, with all kinds of montages from all the TV shows and stuff laid over the Enterprise as a teaser trailer for Star Trek VI. Well, that's the end of Star Trek Motion Picture, that particular clip. When the Enterprise flies over the camera like that, and you see the saucer section go over your head, and you see the deflector dish, and you see the... And it flies right over, and it goes to warp. I was just like, I was in tears. I was like, oh, my God. This is just magnificent. And I loved it. I just can't say enough about it that it's playing on Wednesday night. If you have not seen it yet in the movie theater, Wednesday night is the final showing at the Fathom Events. And I highly recommend that you go and see it because you won't be disappointed. So without any further ado, like I said, we're going to do something a little different here tonight. And usually we do Star Trek birthdays on Trek Talking. We're going to make an exception tonight, and there's a reason. So if we're going to do birthdays, we have to play the birthday song. So without any further ado, hit it.
That was not a Klingon song.
So why am I playing the birthday song? Because Star Trek turned 53 this past week. And in honor of Star Trek's birthday, we're going to talk about how Star Trek has affected us, what Star Trek means to us, and we're just going to just have some fun Trek talking on Star Trek tonight. So give us a call, 646-668-2433, and join in the conversation. We're going to talk, share stories about how we got involved in Star Trek, the first episodes that we've seen, the first time we saw a Star Trek movie, the first time we dressed up as a Klingon. As you guys know that are listeners of this show, when we start talking, we can meander anywhere. But I will tell you this, we are going to be staying in front of the camera tonight. We're not going to be talking about Leslie dying twice. We're not going to be talking about anything that's happened in movies or on the sets. We're strictly going to be talking about fandom, what it means to us. So without any further ado, I just wanted to say my grandparents lived in Brooklyn, New York. I used to go down there and spend the summers. And at midnight, there was a Channel 11 in New York, WPIX Channel 11, and their logo was the World Trade Centers. And at midnight, they had a summer theater called Chiller Theater, where the six-fingered hand would come out of a pool of blood and go, ha, 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 Chiller Theater. I remember it as vivid as if it was yesterday, because that was the first time I saw Star Trek. And I got out of bed, because when you're a country kid and you're down in New York City, you don't want to sleep. You want to check out all the excitement. So I would sneak out of bed. My grandparents lived in a brownstone, and I would go downstairs. I would turn on the TV, and there's Chiller Theater. And the first Star Trek episode that I ever saw, the one that sucked me in and doomed me for life, was maybe not the best Star Trek episode to be the first one that you ever saw. But it doesn't matter, because it was enough to suck me in and hook me for life. It was, now I'm drawing a blank. It was the episode with Landru, and you will be absorbed.
Landru.
Yeah, what was that title of that episode? My God, I am getting old. But that was the first Star Trek episode that I saw, and every night I would sneak downstairs, turn on Chiller Theater, and watch an episode of Star Trek, and that got me hooked. And the thing that pulled me in the most is because at that time I was really into Star Wars, obviously. Star Trek, I hadn't given it a thought, but that was before the internet. That was before you had everything at your fingertips. That was before Netflix, before video stores, before VHS, before any of that. And when I found out that Star Trek, the history that Star Trek had, because by this point in time, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, was in the theaters. So now I found out that not only was the Wrath of Khan a movie, but there was a TV show about that. Then I find out that before Captain Kirk, there was another Enterprise with Captain Pike. And I started finding out that Star Trek had a rich history besides just this. And that's all it took for my imagination to run wild. And here I am, hooked for life. So, Leslie, what was your first encounter with Star Trek, and what pulled you in?
Boy, I couldn't tell you which episode was the first episode. what pulled me in was, I don't know, I was not by choice necessarily, but I was a loner in the town. I was not, I'll just say it is that I'm Jewish, and back in the 50s and 60s, there probably was maybe 20 Jewish people in the town of Saranac Lake, which at that time was 7,000 people. And I was an outcast. My whole family was an outcast. And I was very alone. And Star Trek just gave me hope. It had episodes where, you know, you could be different and yet you're still accepted. And that, you know, that obviously hit a chord with me.
Now, what if half of your face was black and the other half was white, but the right side of my face was black and the left side was white? Would that make any difference?
Right. Well, that's my point exactly, is that,
yep.
You know, obviously Frank Gorshin, well, both of them thought that it made a difference in the people. And you know, Kirk and everybody else is trying to say, no, you're the same species. And they're arguing the point that, no, we're not the same species. Well, we're all human beings. And just because your eyes are brown instead of blue, or your hair is brown, black instead of blonde, or your skin is a different color, we're all people. And that's what Star Trek tried to say to people.
Now, Leslie, did it hit you that the Enterprise represented planet Earth, and the fact that we had Asians, Russians, blacks, aliens, Scotsmen, we had like pretty much the whole globe represented on the Starship Enterprise? Did you catch on to that when you were growing up as well, or didn't see that until later?
Well, Chekhov didn't come in until later, but my family background is we're half Hungarian, half Russian. I mean, again, we look exactly like the person standing next to us. But I remember in social study class, the homework assignment was to find out what your bloodline, or, you know, what countries you came from. And most everybody here, you know, was either mostly English, or there might have been German or something like that. When I stood, you got to remember Cold War and all that kind of stuff, 50s and 60s. When I stood up in the classroom and said I was half Russian and half Hungarian, my classmates called me a communist. Kids can be very cruel.
Yes, they can. They absolutely can.
I mean, it was, well, now I'm I'll take it one step further. This is how little people know, is that one person stood up and said, I'm 100% English. And, of course, I had to mouth off, and it's true, is the English are not pure. I mean, the Romans invaded England. You had, everybody invaded England. So, no, there's no such thing as a pure English person. If you were to go back through their bloodline, you're going to find all these different countries. So
exactly.
That wasn't a very popular thing for me to say, but I guess I was hurt because of what they said about me. So I guess I was bad.
And, you know, that's one of the things that really attracted me to Star Trek in the first place, is that, you know, the people that I've run into that I've met in my life through my involvement in Star Trek, such as Leslie and Ken and many other people, all share that belief that we're all the same on the inside, that we all deserve to be treated with respect, and that you treat other people the way you want to be treated yourself. And I think that at the core, that's what Star Trek is all about. Ken, how about you? What was your first involvement with Star Trek? What pulled you in and kept you here?
Well, again, I've always been into science fiction and fantasy and everything else like that. And like I said, Star Trek was just, you know, I mean, when it first came on, you know, I was fascinated by it because there had been a certain gulf in a period of time, and you know, to have it on television was like cool. And again, you know, as through Star Trek and through everything else along the years, until eventually, you know, when I moved away in the late 70s, I mean, I'm thankful that my parents, especially my dad, indulged me a lot in seeing a lot of the Star science fiction that was around. But again, I always was into that. Always read a lot of books. Oh God, I used to suck up books like a sponge. Like I said, the one memory I mentioned to Leslie was, again, you have to understand, it was 66. I was, well, when the show first premiered, I was 9. I didn't become 10 until about 2 months or so later. Again, so my approach was basically just the fact that it was science fiction, it was cool, it was on. 10 years old, you don't really get that deep on things at that point. I didn't get that appreciation for the show until much later. I mean, all the nuances and everything else associated with that. But again, one of my interesting memories was, and I still don't know how I did it to this day. Again, maybe the indulgence spread to the rest of my relatives too. But we were at my Uncle Eric's house when it was on one time. And now Uncle Eric had the color television set. So I don't know how I managed to do it, but I got him to turn the TV set so I could watch Star Trek in color. And again, you have to understand the timing, what they were. It was, you know, mid to late 60s. I mean, color was a big deal. And so I got to see it. And again, it was like, wow. Because we had the black and white set at home. So it totally was something, you know, really, you know, caught my eye. And got me interested in so forth and stuff like that.
I forgot to mention that. My grandparents had a color TV, too. That's how I knew that the six-fingered hand was pulling it down into blood because it was in color. But anyway.
Yeah, you know, but, I mean, you know, matter of fact, actually, if you find most of the television series at that, well, actually slightly later than that, but, you know, that time or later, the TV series used to actually advertise the fact that they were in color.
And
that's how big of a back then.
Ken, we have a caller on the line, and let's click over here and see who we have. Good evening. Thank you for calling Stunt Trek tonight. What's your name and where are you calling us from? Hello? Are you there? Caller, can you hear me? Nope, I guess the caller decided not to say something. Give us a call back. We'll get you on the air, caller. But I agree. Star Trek in color, when we came back home and I watched it in black and white, it wasn't the same as seeing it in color. So that was a big attraction. But I think you're right, Ken. I growing up in those times, Star Wars was it. You know, everyone was in the Star Wars phase, but Star Wars was science fiction, but not like Star Trek. And you had Buck Rogers, you had the Black Hole, you had Tron, you had Saturn III, you had Logan's Run, a plethora.
White Bottom of the Sea, you had Time Tunnel.
Lost in Space. There was a lot of classic sci-fi that you could watch at that time, but none of them touched the chord that Star Trek did and still does today. And I think that's what makes Star Trek so special. It's that,
again,
like Leslie said, we all get along. and
you know,
we
you,
make
you
it.
Understood that meaning deeper on. I mean, you know, again, you know, I mean, 10 years old in Metro New York, your thoughts don't run too deep.
No, but you still see. I think that your mind.
Oh, yeah,
I'll give you an example.
I understood what was
when Next Generation
but,
came
yeah.
out. I was asked to run some after school courses at a local school about Star Trek, and I did. And I picked an episode to show the kids called Ethics, Next Generation episode. For you, for those of you who don't remember that episode, I'll give you a brief rundown, very brief. Worf gets hit with a container. He ruptures his spine. He's going to die. He can't walk. He asks Riker to kill him. Riker won't do it. Beverly can't help him. There's a doctor on board that's going to use this experimental technique to save him, but he might die if it doesn't work, blah, 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 blah. And so anyways, she uses the experiment on him and saves him. That was one episode. The other episode was Galand and Kor, where Geordi crashes with some Romulans. And the only one that can save the Romulan is Worf because his blood is the same, which doesn't make any sense because I would have thought Romulan blood would have worked, but that doesn't matter. And the Romulan would rather die than have Klingon filth flowing through his veins. Worf won't help the Romulan because they're without honor. And you got this whole hate thing going on. Now, Picard could have ordered it Worf to do it, but didn't. And so I show these episodes to the kid, and the kids think it's all cool and stuff, but wouldn't you know it? When it comes right down to what the episode is about, kids understand a lot more than you think they do. And they have no problem looking at it and saying, well, I think Worf should have saved that Romulan's life because the Romulan was going to die if Worf didn't help him, and he should have helped them. And kids understand that, and they see through, you know, through the facade of science fiction to what the real story is. Now, if you replace Worf and the Romulan would say a Muslim and a Mexican today, that story would probably play the same way. So I think that people may not have gotten the gist of it on the surface, or maybe they didn't admit it, but I think subconsciously we all knew what was going on in those stories. Absolutely. So Leslie, talking about fandom, we know that you went on to work on Star Trek, but we're in the Wayback Machine, much, much prior to those days. So what exactly was your first involvement with Star Trek fandom?
Well, besides watching every single episode of Star Trek over and over again, I mean, I basically memorized the episodes. I could name every episode name and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember if it was the first or the second convention, Star Trek convention, that was held in New York City. And I don't know how I convinced my father to let me go, and I probably went down on the bus because I don't think I was able to drive yet. But I went down to the convention, had a great time. Well, again, you know, you can be such a loner or so, as opposed to using the word loner, you could be so alone in a town of 7,000 and go to a convention that I don't remember how. Let's say there were 500 people. Let's say there was even 1,000 people. We all loved each other because we all loved Star Trek. You know, none of us found each other different. So anyways, I did go down to the convention in New York City. I still have the pamphlet. They had a beautiful booklet that, you know, once you signed up, they gave you this yellow Star Trek bag, and in it was the pamphlet, and I guess the schedule was probably in there. And I even entered the trivia contest, and I came in third. Which I'm pretty,
wow.
I'm proud that I came in third. I mean, that's how much I love Star Trek and knew all the trivia of all the episodes.
And you know what? I think you're right. That's one of the beautiful things about Star Trek is that when you go to a convention, nobody judges you. We're all the same. We're all cut from the same cord, and no one judges anyone when they're at a Star Trek convention because we're all the same. So,
You know what? Even more so is that you might see someone in a wheelchair, or you see someone with a obviously physical disability, and they're still treated as a normal human being. They probably go to their own hometown or their school and made fun of. But again, at a Star Trek convention, whether you're standing on your own 2 feet or whether you're sitting in a wheelchair, you're as equal as everybody else in the room.
And that is the beauty of it. So listen, we're going to take a very short break here. We're going to hear from our sponsors. If you, your organization, your event, your club, your business would like to sponsor this show, then just shoot us an email or message us on Facebook, and we'll let you know how that happens. But right now, we're going to hear from one of our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
I've got to check that place out. Anyways.
So, live there.
Back to our show. So, yeah, if you'd like to sponsor one of our podcasts, just shoot us a message and we'll let you know how to make that happen. So, Ken, how about you? What was your first involvement in Star Trek fandom?
Okay, everybody sitting down. Time for the shocker of the century. My first entry officially into Star Trek fandom was your convention.
Oh my God, jump back. No way. No way.
Way. Way.
Wow. Wow.
I had always been a fan of Star Trek, and I saw the movie when it first came out and everything else. But again, in trying to remember and connect how things were going on, because I had moved up here in 79, trying to connect the dots between, 79 and 91 when the convention was, I just out looped, that sort of thing. And yeah, so when I walked into your doors was my coming out party for Star Trek fandom.
My God, Ken, it just seems to me like you've always been there.
I started with you, Jim.
Well, I'm glad that I'm the reason that you came out of the closet. So I'm happy about that.
A closet Trekkie?
And I got to admit, it was, although I only was there for one day. I forget what I was doing the Sunday, I think. Because it was there Saturday. I don't think it was there Sunday. I forget what I was doing there the next day. But again, I mean, to see that many people, and everybody should know by now. I mean, the fire department almost closed that place down. You had so many people in that place, and to walking around and to see all these people, and the dealer's play spaces and everything else, and all the people in costume. I was like, wow. Again, talk about a baptism of fire.
And we burned you good.
That's right. And I'm still with you, Jim. years later.
I know. After 53 years. Well, not 53, but. And oddly enough, you know who else was at that? Well, actually, this, it's funny because that convention ties so many of us together because there was someone else at that convention. Russ Haslidge was there because at that time, we were running the Klingon wing of the International Federation of Trekkers. And Russ Haslidge was there because we were the International Federation of Trekkers' first national convention. So Russ Haslidge was there. And Leslie, a couple of your friends that we had on the show a little while back were also there. Jim Lowe. And what was the other person? What was the other girl's name?
Cynthia Merrick.
They were both at that convention as well. So it's a small world, very small world.
I was just going to say, Star Trek can be such a large world and it can be such a small world all at the same time.
Yep, it's definitely, in the words of a great sage, it's fascinating. But so Star Trek just turned 53 years old. We have Star Trek Discovery Season 3. We have Star Trek, we're going to see in mid to late 2020. We're going to be seeing Star Trek Picard in early 2020. It's already wrapped production, and they're on a post-production right now. We have Short Treks, which are right around the corner. Like any day now, that they're going to start dropping promos for when we're going to see those. We have 6 Short Treks episodes to look forward to before we see Picard. We also have Lower Decks, the animated series, which we have 2 seasons of, which we won't see until the end of 2020, early 2021. We have a Nickelodeon animated Star Trek series, which is we really don't have any information on. We have rumors of Quentin Tarantino Trek, which I'm extremely excited about. And we also have the Michelle Yeoh-led Section 31, which they won't even talk about until the end of Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery. So what started in 1966 is still going strong today. We went through the animated series. We went through Next Generation. We went through Deep Space Nine. We went through Voyager. We went through Enterprise. And here we are today. Star Trek is still alive and kicking. I think the message behind it is still there. I think it's still thriving just as much today as it ever was. But things are different now. You know, we don't have Star Trek conventions like we used to. Unfortunately, we have Comic-Cons.
I think that's because of the company called Creation.
We shall not speak.
Creation Entertainment just quashed Star Trek conventions that were not connected with them.
I could show you the scars I have from dealing with them. Brutal. Absolutely brutal what they did. And then after they crushed everybody, they pulled the plug and that was it. But there are still some really good Star Trek orientated shows that you can go to. One of them that I've been frequenting lately is Trek Ticonderoga up in Ticonderoga, New York. Very small. It's at the Ticonderoga High School. Leslie was there. Was it last year or the year before? Anyways, up in Ticonderoga, and it's you know, very small. I can't stress that. It's not like the Las Vegas convention or, you know, anything like that. Maybe 300-400 people, would you say, Leslie? If that? Maybe.
In Trek Ticonderoga, you're talking.
Yeah,
yeah,
a couple of hundred.
Because James has the license with Star Trek, he had some incredible guests this year.
Yes, because it's the official set tour, they're able to get people like Ethan Peck, who I had the honor of meeting. Last year, they had Carl Urban. So he's able to have access to getting stars up there that normally you wouldn't get a chance to see. And it's a very small, very personal convention. It's in the Ticonderoga High School. And I have so much fun when I go up there dressed up as a Klingon, talking to fans, meeting fans, running Star Trek Attack Wing in the game room, posing for pictures, just like in the old days when Star Trek conventions were all over the place. So, Leslie, what was it like going to your first convention, and who was the guest star that was there? Do you remember?
Because I have a picture of him with me, or me with him, George Takei was there. You're talking a lifetime ago. There were so many people there, or there were so many guests there. But the only proof I have is a picture of me with George, which was very interesting because years later, we actually did an episode up in Ticonderoga with George. So here the first time I meet him, I'm a Trekkie fan meeting him, and the second time I met him, you know, here I'm taking care of him on the set. His husband, Brad Altman, gave me very explicit instructions that I was supposed to be George's bodyguard while he was up in Ticonderoga, and that's exactly what I did.
Well, I wouldn't think that you'd have too many problems up at Ticonderoga, unless Champ crawls out of the lake, maybe. But
Brad didn't know what to expect. I didn't have to karate chop anybody. I mean, we all had a great time, but it was more, you know, making sure that George got to the set. You know, I had my parents' car, and I would drive them to the set, and I'd drive them back to the hotel, and, you know, that was more what I did as the bodyguard, but I also, you know, made sure that he was safe. He had to do a sword fight, and actually between Tom and myself in California, we created the sword fight, Then, when George and I went to New York, you know, I had to train James because James was fighting with George. I had to train James to do the fight. So,
isn't that awesome?
Like you say, I don't know. I guess you call me a hybrid. I don't know what to call me because I enjoy being near these people just as much as anybody else. And yet at the same time, I have to, you know, play the role of the professional, you know, stunt person as well.
Well, I would ask Ken, but I already know the answer. So I'm going to answer. When I went to my first convention, which was KlingCon 91 on Saturday, the guest star was Mark Leonard, the late, great Mark Leonard. And my wife and I, Karen, went to pick him up at the airport and had him in our minivan. And we brought him back to the hotel and up to his room. And we sat down at the table and talked. And just like Leslie, I'm a huge fan. I love Star Trek. I love everything about it. But right now, I'm a convention promoter. I'm an organizer. I'm not a fan. So you have to step out of that and deal with them on a professional level, which can be difficult sometimes, because I could tell you, I won't, but at any rate. So Mark Leonard was my first experience meeting a Star Trek actor as one-on-one for work. Let's call it work. So we drive back and we're talking about the weather and how was the flight, blah, 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 blah. Star Trek VI was just around the corner, and we get up to the room and we sit down. I'm telling him, this, if you need anything, blah, 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 blah. And he says, Mark Leonard says, well, don't you want to ask me about Star Trek? And I was like, well, yes, of course I want to ask you about Star Trek. And since he opened the door, we did. And we talked and we talked, and he was so cool. And then after we got done talking, I'm standing there with my wife, and he says to me, well, you seem nervous. I said, yeah, it's my first convention. I hope people show up tomorrow, and I hope everything is right. He leaned across the table and mind melded me. I was just stunned. I couldn't. I was like, oh, my God, Sarah just mind melded me. I've lived. That's it. It's done. It cannot get any better than this. And I was like, wow, that was too cool. And of course, the convention did go off well. We did sell out. The fire marshal was going to shut us down because we had so many people there, and it turned out to be awesome. So I understand when you're dealing with these people that you have to be professional. And I tried. I was until they opened up the floodgate. So,
well, I think we've talked about this in the past, is that, you know, I try to be professional on the set. And if an actor or an actress gives me an opening, yeah, we'll talk about grandkids or this or that. But you just can't go to an actor and go, oh, I thought you were so wonderful in this and blah, 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 blah. And then be a convention promoter, you know, and then be the convention promoter, blah, 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 blah. Convention promoter, you know, you had to be the convention promoter first, wait for the opening. Once you got the opening, now you can say whatever you want to say.
I think, I think that's things I found through my experiences through going through all the conventions from Jim's onward, is it in most places, again, if the opportunity presents itself, now, okay, sometimes it might be, well, I have to do this, but I really have never had a negative experience with a star in all the time that I've ever, you know, had associations with them. Everything from photo ops to being in autograph lines to one of the more curious experiences I had being at a cocktail party with Nikki Klein, and of course being at a breakfast with Grace Lee Whitney. She was a corker, you know, first thing in the morning. I've never really had a negative experience with any of these people because I think, again, situationally, I think they understand, most of them, if not, you know, a good portion of them, understand about the fans, and they understand the dichotomy, so to speak, but they also understand that, you know, they want to be friendly with these people. They're just, you know, they can't be as friendly as maybe the fans would want, but, you know, there's no advantage or disadvantage. There's no reason to be hostile either.
Well, I think...
Right. I can't point to an experience, but I think I've heard experiences where a fan might go up to a person and instead of realizing that this is an actor, they're more tuned into the character. They'll start arguing or, you know, you're really rotten to this guy, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like, huh?
Well, I had an experience at QueenCon. Mark Leonard was there Saturday. Marina Sirtis was on Sunday. Marina Sirtis was on TNG. This was right at Best of Both Worlds Part 2. And so Marina's Next Gen was super, super red hot at that time. We had so many people there that it was thousands. I mean, it was crazy. So when we went to pick Marina up, we couldn't bring her in through the hotel lobby because it was just too many people. So we had to go around back and bring her in through the kitchen. I'm going to tell you something. That woman has a mouth on her. She was saying words to me. I don't even know what they were. I mean, she was swearing up and down. I think she might have been swearing at me in foreign languages. You know, I was like, oh my God, this is Deanna Troi? And I was really concerned because I thought, when we get her to the stage, is this what she's going to be like? But you know what? The minute she stepped on that stage, the smile went on, the charm went on, and there she was. So, you know, they know how to be when they need to be that way. But I think one of the things that attracted people to Star Trek, Kevin Leslie, and people listening, is in the early days when you would go to Star Trek conventions. Star Trek conventions, people are probably going to be shocked to hear this. Star Trek conventions were only Star Trek conventions. They were the first ones. Star Trek conventions were unique to Star Trek. Not because they were called Star Trek conventions, but because there weren't any other type of convention except Star Trek at the time. So you could go to a convention and hang out with George or Walter, Nichelle, Jimmy, any of them. And they were grateful that you were there and you got to know them personally. And they loved it. They ate it up because this was their bread and butter and they loved it. And when you went to meet George and you went jogging with him or you hung out with him or whatever, and then you watch him in a movie or you see him on TV, it changes your perception of the show and of the characters when you know the people personally. And I think that's part of the charm and the attraction of Star Trek through the years, is that TOS did it, TNG did it, but oddly enough, after TNG went, the Deep Space Nine actors didn't do a lot of conventions. Voyager people didn't do a lot. Enterprise hardly did any. You might see them from time to time. Star Trek conventions started to fall away, and fans didn't get to interact with their idols as much as they did in the 60s and 80s with TNG and TOS, which is sad. But, you know, I know you've worked, not talking about your experience behind the camera, Lovely, but when you hung out with George and met him at that first convention that you went to, did you think differently when you watched an episode of Star Trek and you saw him in it, or you went to see a Star Trek the motion picture and there was George? Did it make you feel any different about the character knowing the actor personally?
No, because I guess I got to admit, since age 3 or 4, I knew I was going to be an actress. I didn't realize that there was a category called stunt person or stunt woman, but I always knew I was going to be an actress. So I don't know. I guess I was able to separate an actor from a character in a show. I guess I appreciated him more watching him on the episodes, that he was as nice as he was in the episodes. You know, the funniest thing is, I was sitting here thinking, is that I don't even remember if there were pictures that he signed. I mean, I definitely don't have a signed picture by him. But you know, like where they charge for photo ops or whatever, this is my little whatever camera that I brought with me, that someone, you know, took my camera and took a picture of me next to George. And like I say, it wasn't like, if you don't buy this autographed picture, you can't take a picture of me, or you have to sign up for a photo op and it's $50 for a photo op. I mean, it was just a group of actors and fans at this convention.
That was something that, as the convention, Star Trek conventions started to wane away, that's, you know, what happened is that the whole convention model changed, so that instead of paying a star a fee, you had the star doing photos as how they paid for the weekend. Because that's, you go to a Star Trek convention and you have an autograph line, and you go to any other convention and you have an autograph line, and well, you went into the dealer's room and you paid for the photograph, or in the one case, I forget where the convention was, but I got a picture of Nicola Bryant that she brought her own. that's what you did. You paid for the photo, which was like $5 or $6, and that's how much it cost to buy the picture. That's the way things used to be run.
Yeah, and I mention that to people that say they refuse to pay for Star Trek because Star Trek should be free. And I say to these people, do you pay for an autograph or a photo op at a convention? And they say, well, yeah. I say, well, you know what? For years and years and years and years, I met every actor. I never paid a dime for an autograph. Not once, ever. And now if I want to go and meet Ethan Peck or Carl Urban, you better cough up $60 or you ain't getting that autograph. What's the difference? They used to be free, and now they're $60. So, you know, it's a business. Everyone wants to make their money, and that's just the way it is. So, believe it or not, we're just about out of time. Wow. Happy birthday. Happy 53rd birthday to Star Trek. I want to make sure to tell everybody to tune in to Trek Talking on Thursday night. We're going to have John Lim and Andy Bray on with us, and they have a new Star Trek, Making Fake Star Trek book, Making Fake Star Trek 2. I don't know what the title of it is, but they're going to fill us in on Thursday night. We're going to talk about that. Eric went to see Star Trek, the motion picture, or he's going to see it Wednesday night tomorrow. I already saw it, so we're going to talk about Star Trek, the motion picture. I already talked about it with you guys, but we'll talk about it in more detail on Thursday. And we're also going to have a visit from Chekhov and Sulu. That's right. Mr. Sulu and Mr. Chekhov are going to be with us, and they're going to be telling us their experiences on the V'ger mission and what it was like to be back aboard the Enterprise and have the whole crew show back up after such a long absence. So it's going to be a lot of fun. You don't want to miss it. And next Tuesday, we'll be back with another episode of Stunt Trek. I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll come up with something, right, Leslie? We always do.
Well, actually, always. I wouldn't mind continuing this conversation. I think there's an hour's more worth of celebrating Star Trek.
Yeah, we can do that. We pretty much talked about TOS. We can continue this conversation next week and move into the 80s and the TNG years because things changed a little bit from the 60s to the 80s. So we can talk about that and how the popularity of TNG changed the face of conventions from the 60s to the 80s. We can definitely carry this conversation out. So that's what we're going to do next Tuesday. Same bat time, same bat channel. We'll do that. And please head on over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Make a comment, say, you know, about the show or maybe something you'd like to see or hear. Leslie will get back to you personally, which is awesome. And you can also request an autographed picture from Leslie over there, too. She has a whole plethora to offer. Just go over there, shoot her a IM, and she'll get right back to you with the particulars. And please, if you have an event that you'd like to have promoted on this show or an organization business, just shoot me an IM, and I'll tell you how to make that happen. And you can be sponsored here on Stunt Trek, you can be on Comic Corner, you can be on War Room, which we're going to do next Monday on the new Star Trek Attack Wing fleet packs that are out, or on Trek Talk on Thursday night. So it's a lot of exposure for you, your event, or your organization. And wow, the lady's telling me we're down to 90 seconds. Wow, where does the time go, Leslie? Wow. So anyways, I want to say thank you to Avril Ken for hanging out and sharing some Star Trek memories with us tonight. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being here.
And, of course, the Leslie Hoffman, because we wouldn't be here on Star Trek without the Leslie Hoffman. So thanks for hanging out and chatting with us and sharing some of your memories, Leslie.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
And I'm Uncle Jim, and we will be back next week. We're going to do another Stunt Trek. We'll talk about TNG and Star Trek in the 80s and how it changed from the 60s. I will be back with you guys on Thursday night for Trek Talk and beyond. And as usual, be good to each other. Keep trekking, and we'll see you all next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there.